I would like to acknowledge Dr. Teresa Anderson and Donna Weaver. Teresa Anderson is a consultant to IAC and Donna Weaver from CDC for their assistance with this presentation. Now, there is not enough time today to adequately do service to the topic of vaccination errors. There are enormous numbers of errors, and I have been allotted 20 minutes. So I'm going to fly through this presentation, and I know you won't be able to take notes, but CDC is posting this on their website. So all the links and all the resources that I'm going to give you today will be available on their website once the presentation is posted, and we'll also be posting it on IAC's website, immunize.org. And I know many of you in this audience know about vaccine errors, and this is old news for most of you. But I'd like to hear about more errors when we have time at the end. I'd like to open it up and hear your stories too. The most egregious errors, that I've heard recently have been injecting LAIV, injecting flu mist, and Rotavix has been injected as well. But we'll go on with those are very rare. We only heard of one case of each. So, vaccines are, as you all know, vaccines are very fragile, have to be kept in the refrigerator, have to be kept within a range of temperatures, and they're very expensive and have to be protected. And if they're kept out of range, if they are injured in any way, they should not be given to any patient because they are not going to help that patient. Make sure you're giving them undamaged vaccine. Now, what are the repercussions of the storage and handling errors? Well, of course, your practice will lose money unless your vaccines are insured, but it's a huge financial loss to lose vaccine. Thousands and thousands of dollars can be lost. Patients are not protected from the disease if you've not stored and handled them properly. You have to recall the patients who received the compromised doses. You need to explain to irate parents and revaccinate their children, which is no fun for anyone if you have to repeat those doses. And that what you don't want is the media to write a story in your local newspaper and give you negative publicity about what happened at your work setting. And there have been plenty of those, and these are just a few examples. Now, IAC gets a lot of email inquiries from local public health and practices about vaccine errors. And so what I'm going to be talking to you today about are some of the ones that we've heard that we've gotten by email, we get them by phone, and just in private consultation. So. Here's an example of one where the refrigerator was out of range for months and months. And not only, they had to call toddlers back to repeat the entire series, the primary series of their vaccinations. So this happens. I mean, it's really shocking, but it does happen. So important things to do to prevent things like that happening are assigning a vaccine manager, someone who's responsible for taking care of the vaccine. Of course, there should be a backup person too, and that person should be training the staff in an ongoing way about safeguarding and protecting vaccines so everybody understands what an important commodity this is in a practice. You should make sure your refrigerator and freezer are up to standards and suitable for vaccine storage. You should only be using certified calibrated thermometers, and monitor and record the refrigerator and the freezer temperatures twice a day and review the results twice a day. Now, a lot of the errors have been in people actually recording the temperature but not noting that it is out of range. I mean, really, seriously, this happens all the time. So if you note that it's out of range, or when you note that it's out of range, you need to take immediate action. Deal with those vaccines that are in the freezer or refrigerator and implement your vaccine emergency plan. Here's an example of an out-of-range temperature. Most of you are familiar with this chart. You've seen it for many years. It's on CDC's website. It was developed by the state of Michigan. IAC worked on it too, and CDC provided input. It's available on IAC's website at this URL. This is an out-of-range temperature where action needed to be taken in the red circle. Here are some resources that are really valuable for handling vaccine and storage problems or for preventing them. And I'm not going, these are from IAC. And then there are certain ones from CDC that are excellent. These are just a few of them. I urge you all to make sure you know about the first one on this list, Vaccine Storage and Handling Training Material Toolkit from CDC. It's excellent. It's an online program. Now, what about administration errors? There are a lot of administration errors. What are they? Giving the wrong vaccine or giving the wrong diluent or only giving diluent. Giving the wrong dose, giving expired vaccine, giving the vaccine by the wrong route to the wrong site with the wrong needle size. Those are mutually exclusive, but they can also happen together. Giving it at the wrong time on the wrong schedule and giving the vaccine to the wrong patient. This article was published in Vaccine in 2009. It reviewed vaccine errors that were submitted to a medical database. And what they focused on was the five rights framework. Giving the right drug, the right dose, the right route, the right time to the right patient. And then Donna Weaver added using the right technique and the right documentation. The most common error that was found in that study was giving the wrong vaccine. And the most commonly confused vaccines were DTaP with TDAP. Lots of that going on in this country, you know, giving the pediatric one to the adults and vice versa. Mixing up vaccines that sound similar in name, mixing Adacel and Dapticel, and others that have similar packaging. Here's an excellent piece from the California Immunization Organization. It's on EZIZ. Check your vials. Is it Tdap, Dtap, or TD? And look at all the products that are pictured here. A very handy resource to have in your practice, in your work setting. And the importance of checking vials three times. And we got an example of someone who gave a five-year-old a Tdap. And then we get examples of 50-year-olds getting DTaP, very common mistake. And how do you handle these? Well, most of you in this room know this, but when you give a DTaP to a person who's over the age of 7, that does count as valid, which, you know, it shouldn't be given to anyone. It's definitely an error, but you can count it as valid. When you give Tdap under the age of 7, you don't count it as valid if it's given as dose 1, 2, or 3 of the DTaP series, but it does count if you give it as dose 4 or 5 of the DTaP series. And then Tdap given to a 7 to 9-year-old does count as a valid dose even though it's an error. Here's another source of confusion, Varivax and Zostavax. These vaccines are given to the wrong age. We got an example of a 1-year-old who was given Zostavax vaccine, mistakenly thought it was, the administrator thought it was, well, actually, she asked the physician in her clinic, is what the email said, and he said, basically, it's the same thing, and to go ahead and give it to the 1-year-old. So it was given, and actually, this shouldn't have happened. This is a big mistake. And it should never happen again. The Zostavax contains 14 times the antigen level of the Varivax vaccine. So this does happen. And then what about the 60-year-old who got Varivax? Well, this happens too. You know, they were supposed to get Zostavax and they got Varivax. That shouldn't happen either. So what do you do? Well, if you find that you gave the Varivax to a 60-year-old and you meant to give Zostavax, you could give the Zostavax at the same visit if you discovered it at the same visit. But if you don't, then you have to have them wait 28 days before coming back in for their next dose. More errors. This is using the wrong diluent. Now, there are a lot of diluents. This is a list of the lyophilized freeze-dried vaccines, and their diluents are in green. So you have sodium chloride in some, you have tripedia in some, you have Dapticel IPV, sterile water. Manbeo has a vaccine in its diluent also. It has the serogroup type C, Y, and W135. So what you don't want to do is give, for example, don't give the diluent alone because you're not adequately vaccinating the patient. But just don't mix these up. It's important to give the proper diluent, so read the labels carefully. If they are not interchangeable, the immunization needs to be repeated if the wrong diluent is used. And the diluent for MMR, MMRV, Zostavax, and Varivax are the same diluent. They're sterile water. But so if you mix those up, it's acceptable. I mean, you don't have to readminister the dose, but it's still a mistake. You should always give the proper diluent with the vaccine, but the dose will count for those four. Here's an example. Someone wrote that said that they reconstituted Actib with the sterile water from the MMR, and they didn't give the sodium chloride. Do they need to repeat it? Yes, they need to repeat it. It wasn't given properly. So what about reconstituting vaccines? You know that most vaccines, after you reconstitute them, they have a timeline in which they have to be utilized. And if they're not utilized in that time period, they have to be discarded. So here are the timelines that you need to keep in mind when you're reconstituting a vaccine. There are many that are 30 minutes. Varicella, Zostavax, MMRV is 30 minutes. Pentacell is 30 minutes. Menimmune MPSV4, that's a 30 minutes if you're using the single dose vial, not if you're using the multi-dose vial. It says that Trihibit, which is not available right now, is less than 30 minutes. And then Menimmune, I already mentioned that one. Menveo's package insert, the new MCV4 vaccine, says it give it ASAP, but it's actually okay if it's stored at room temperature for less than 8 hours, it can be administered. And Actib and Hibrix are still good within 24 hours. So here's an example that we got of somebody who got, her child got two doses of Prevnar instead of one dose of Prevnar and one dose of Hib, and this mom is really concerned about what that will do to her child. So giving that extra dose or giving a wrong dose usually doesn't cause a serious complication. It rarely does, but it can lead to a more vigorous local reaction. The patient is left unprotected from the disease for which they were not vaccinated. There's the additional cost for administering the wrong dose. There's the inconvenience to the patient or parent of coming back to the office to rectify the situation. And then the parent can also lose confidence in the provider because they look like they don't know what they're doing. And you can have an upset parent. Here's another error, giving the wrong dose. This is a big one too. This is giving when you have, the ones where this is the biggest problem are influenza vaccine, hepatitis A and hepatitis B, where you have different amounts of vaccine for children and for adults. So we hear a lot about cases, this is one where an adult got a pediatric dose of hepatitis B vaccine. So you see that with hepatitis B and hepatitis A. And you also see children getting the adult dose. And you also saw with influenza vaccine that some adults are getting the 0.25, which is less common than the children getting the adult dose. But there are lots of mistakes going on with giving the wrong dose of influenza vaccine to young children. Here's a little schedule that you can use to help you with hepatitis A and B. Oops, that's mine. Forgot to turn it off. Okay, error, big error. Giving vaccine to a patient with a contraindication. Now, everybody should be using a screening checklist of some kind to make sure that they're not giving vaccines to people who shouldn't get them. So there's one for children, there's one for adults. These are reprinted in the pink book, and you should all be having one, whether it's this one or another one that you've developed for your practice settings. Very important not to give that vaccine to the wrong person. Another error we've heard about is, can I put influenza and pneumococcal vaccine into the same syringe and give it? You know, people are asking that. That must mean that for everyone who's asking it, there are many, many more people out there who are doing it. So two different vaccines should never be combined in the same syringe unless the FDA licensed it for administration that way. Another mistake is giving expired vaccines. So this happens a lot too. And also you have to make sure that you know that when you're reading an expiration date on a vial, that you're reading it properly. On the right screen, it shows that the vaccine expires on 8/06, which means the vaccine expires at the end of August 31st, 2006. So you can give it all the way through the month of August. You shouldn't discard it before the end of the month. So here's one about a child who got a dose of expired vaccine. What do you do after you give a dose of expired vaccine? If it's a live virus vaccine and you have to wait to give the next dose for 28 days so the two vaccines don't interact with each other and don't interfere with each other. If it's an inactivated vaccine that you gave that it was expired, you can give it the same day or any time thereafter. Another error is giving vaccines by the incorrect route, site, or needle size. Here's the list of all the intramuscular. Here's the list of sub-Qs. In the clinic where I used to practice, back in the early 90s, we were giving MMR intramuscularly. You know, I mean, these things happen, and you just assume that people know what the proper route is, and, you know, they really don't know so necessarily. So just make sure that the IMs are being given intramuscularly, sub-Qs subcutaneously, and then two that are either, you know, are fine giving either way. And so here's an example of somebody gave Zostavax IM, and they wrote to us, and does it count? Well, according to the package insert, you know, they shouldn't be given by the wrong route, but ACIP says that if you do give a vaccine by the wrong route, it counts if you give an IM sub-Q or vice versa. The two exceptions being hepatitis B and rabies vaccines. Those must be given intramuscularly or they don't, and properly, or they wouldn't count. Here are some resources on vaccine administration for you to look at later. Here's an excellent video from the California Department of Health that so many have relied upon to learn how to vaccinate and keep staff up to date on how to administer vaccines. Now I'm going to talk about scheduling errors. I'm just going to give you some examples of ones that have come up in our emails. Well, of course, not giving hepatitis B, number one. We all know this is happening in the hospital before discharge. This is an error. This vaccine is recommended for every baby prior to discharge by ACIP, except there's some language about except in rare situations. So this is happening now. The latest statistic is 58% of babies are getting the birth dose within 3 days of age. And that's good. It's just creeping up, but we have 32% to go. Completing Hep B series before age 24 weeks. A lot of babies are finishing at 4 months because they get the birth dose 2 and 4 months. It's supposed to be finished at 6 months with that 2-week grace period, which would bring them down to 24 weeks. Giving rotavirus vaccine after 8 months, 0 days, a mistake. Giving the fourth dose of DTaP before 12 months of age, or less than 6 months after the third dose, a mistake. Giving the last dose of IPV fewer than 6 months from the previous dose. So there should always be at least a 6-month interval between dose, the second to the last and the last dose. Giving HPV number 3 sooner than 24 weeks after dose number 1. And then giving PPSV every 5 years. This is an urban legend that doesn't die. This is still happening. So what's a vaccinator's best reference on vaccine intervals? This is out of the pink book, and this is the URL, and you should make sure you have it. It's also published in the general recommendations, but the most current one is in the pink book, and it's on the internet. And here are some scheduling resources for you to review. And our summary of immunization recommendations and the schedules, the U.S. schedules for children and adults. Okay, documentation errors, and I'm just going to go over the VIS errors because there are so many errors in this country about not using VISs that I thought it was worth discussing. So what are the errors? VISs are legally required that you give them with every dose of vaccine you give. Even if you're an adult, you're vaccinating an adult, you must give a VIS. And the only two exceptions are when you're giving PPSV vaccine and when you're giving Zostavax vaccine. All of the other vaccines, and other exception would be those rare travel vaccines that are given, like Japanese encephalitis and yellow fever. You don't have to get, those are not required by law. But you must give a VIS anytime you give a dose of those vaccines with those exceptions. It's recommended that you do it for every vaccine, but it's the law that you do it with 90% of vaccines and for all persons, not just children. So it's required by law that you give the VIS prior to vaccination. You don't vaccinate them and then hand them the VIS. You must give it before so they have a chance to read it, which in my experience is not done. I mean, the reading of it. But it's that is when you're supposed to give it and give them an opportunity to ask questions. You have to provide a VIS every time the vaccine is given, and then not recording all the needed information in the patient's medical record about the VIS being given. And this is part, this all this information is part of the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act from 1986, that you have to do these things. And what is the legally required information that has to be in the chart? The name of the VIS and the date that's on the VIS. The date that the VIS was given to the patient, the date that the vaccine was administered, the vaccine manufacturer and the lot number, and the name, address, and the title of the vaccinator. That last bullet can be done very quickly and with a little standard chart by putting some initials down, but you know it has to be recorded in some shape or way, shape or form. And here's my last example of a mom who got, her child had a high fever the day after a vaccination. She got really upset and called the hospital and said, what do I do? And they said, well, didn't you get a VIS? And she hadn't. And she called the doctor's office and said, why didn't I get that? And it's required. And they said, no, it's not required. So there are a lot of practices who don't know that VISs are mandated, and you have a lot of work to do to help those practices understand that they're supposed to be giving out VISs with every dose of vaccine so that parents don't get mad. And this is a very hot topic in the anti-vaccine communications now too, is that we aren't giving out VISs. So in summary, just have to remember all the time to do what's right and make sure you check that you're giving the right drug to the right dose, the right route, the right time, the right patient, and using the right technique and the right documentation. And this is extremely difficult. I really think everybody makes mistakes. I mean, I made mistakes when I was doing vaccination clinics. It's really easy, and the more vaccines we have, you know, that we're administering, the more complicated it gets. But I think that it's just important to stay on top of it, make sure staff are trained, and I commend all of you. This is requires extreme attention to detail, very careful work. This is not something that you can just fly through. It's just meticulous work. And I really commend anybody who delivers vaccines. This is a very, difficult thing to do and to do carefully. So my last couple of slides are some resources, again, that you can get on the internet and that will be available on the slide set, and places that you can go for help when you have a question about vaccine administration or errors. And I hope at the end of this we can hear some more from you as the audience about what you're finding in the way of vaccine errors and hearing about in your work settings. Thank you.